is attached to a black leather medical table by red nylon straps attached to every limb. She is blinded and muted with duct tape. On that floor with that metal bar that he used to strangle her with, and that puddle of blood, it just looked like too much blood to come out of a tiny little 8-year-old lady.
Being raped at gunpoint, like, what else do you do? Like, you can't do anything, and it's two men against one woman. And I probably, I weigh 98 pounds. So it's not like I can take them down myself, and I wasn't about to wrestle a gun out of their hand. I was just trying to survive.
Hello, welcome to Human Monsters. Today we are joined by a guest who is going by the alias Cymbeline. She was a victim of horrific domestic violence dealt by the hand of her ex-husband. It's not easy living with a human monster, and she has suffered serious consequences emotionally, physically, and legally. The abuse continues to haunt her to this day, but she is a stronger woman now and has found happiness just when it seemed it would elude her indefinitely. If you have been abused, I hope you find her story inspiring and compelling. I know I do. Okay, so thank you very much for doing this show and for the purposes of the program. Our guest today has chosen to identify by an alias, so I'm going to identify her as Cymbeline. Welcome to the show, Cymbeline.
Thank you.
And what we're here to discuss right now is domestic violence. Cymbeline has experienced domestic violence as a victim. And so I'm going to actually go back to the beginning when you met the assailant, the perpetrator. So describe the relationship you had with this person.
So I was with him for 7 years, and he was actually my first boyfriend. When I met him, he was, slightly older than me. I later found out from her that they also had an abusive relationship. But at the time, he just made me think, oh, she's abusive to me. And I kind of went along with that. So when they broke up, we got together about like a month and a half after that. And I was in college at the time. And it sounds so weird, but I really wasn't initially interested in him at all. Mm-hmm. How he kind of pulled me in was actually just one night we were out with friends, and he opened the trunk of his car and he had a gun in his trunk. And he was like, if you don't go out with me, I'm going to kill myself. I almost killed myself today. And seeing you is the only reason I didn't do that. And so when you're a young girl and you've read Twilight and all these other books, in your head, that's very romantic. Like, oh, I'm his reason to live. But of course, now in retrospect, it's like very clear that that was kind of the beginning of him trying to have control and trying to gain the power in the relationship. And it was pretty much immediately abusive. Going back to like some of our first dates, it was more on the verbal side. And then he raped me for the first time, I would say, on like probably our 3 months of dating. And since it was my first boyfriend, I just thought that was like normal behavior. I didn't for a second think, oh, this is abusive. I just had an association in my mind that, guys can't control themselves. And, the way that everything went down, he really kind of got in my head to make me think like that somehow I caused it. So after that happened, it just turned into a quick downward spiral. And he started, kicking, hitting. And it got pretty frustrating. So, that was our first year of dating. And like I said, at the time, I thought this was just totally normal. I thought this was romantic. I was like, oh, he just likes me so much. But now as I'm in my 30s, not my 20s, it's pretty clear, like, what was going on.
Did you grow up in an atmosphere where abuse went on? Was your father abusive with your mother at all?
No. So I grew up in what most would consider a good home, although my mom was a widow. I think part of the association was that I was molested at a pretty young age, and the person who did that actually ended up, he physically looked a lot like my assailant from my major case that I went through. Very similar appearance and behaviors. So I think that's part of where I got the idea that that stuff was okay, because I never got closure on that. And didn't really tell anybody that it happened until I was pretty old.
Yeah, I never experienced that kind of abuse, but I experienced physical abuse. And what goes on is the abuser doesn't respect boundaries and they're violating them. And eventually, I don't know how often that happened to you, but you kind of live with that. You live with the fact that your boundaries are not respected, that they're being violated, and you don't feel safe. So I guess, unfortunately, that kind of laid the groundwork for this kind of relationship that you had later on in life.
Yes, absolutely. And like, I think a big part of it was, you know, this guy that I was 8 years old when I got molested. And this guy, I only met him for like 3 days and then I never saw him again. And being so young, I had no idea who he was. And it sounds so strange, but I was just so hungry for that love. And I think it's part of it was growing up without a dad. And this is the one guy I felt like, oh, we had this special experience. And that's kind of what he made me think. And so I started to pair some very unhealthy behaviors in guys with affection, I guess you would say. So, like I said, when my ex was being very abusive, I just thought, oh, this means he really, really likes me.
And did you date at all before you met him? You said he was your first relationship. Did you go on any dates before that?
Not really. Like, I kind of tried to, but I was so traumatized from what happened when I was a kid. It sounds so weird, but I needed somebody who was abusive like that to really get me in a relationship. I had a lot of barriers up. And so the idea that this guy kind of forced me into a relationship was probably the only way it was going to happen with where I was at in my healing process. And, you know, I just, at the time, it just seems like, oh, this must be meant to be, because this is my first love, I guess you would say.
And did he demonstrate any generally violent tendencies? Like you mentioned, he was violent in his relationship with the woman he was engaged to. But did he get into fights with other males? Was he a constantly aggressive and confrontational person? Like, even for instance, in a retail store, would he tell off the cashier? Was he that kind of person?
Absolutely. Yes, very much so. And in some ways that's kind of unique, but also not. What was interesting about him is he could not respect anyone having authority over him. So he was in multiple jobs. I don't want to say too much on what all of those were, but when we were dating, I remember that he was almost kicked out of the military several times. And he always had a problem respecting authority. He was always, I would say, at least once a week in a verbal borderline physical altercation with a guy. Like, I remember one time I went down to his apartment and he had smashed all of the dishes and furniture in his apartment. And I tried to ask him what happened, and I honestly still don't know. But one of the two other guys in the apartment, I never saw them again. So, like, I have no idea what happened, but it was pretty clear from his explanation, just didn't make sense. So I thought it was just, oh, all these people are out to get him, and totally bought into his side of the story. But I really noticed it when we moved in together. It got much more toxic. We lived with his family, and every single day he was trying to fight somebody in his own family. And that just astonished me at the time. I'm like somebody that just would avoid conflict at all costs.
And was there ever any manipulation in the relationship? Because I know that a lot of abusive partners will do a thing where, you know, they take it too far at some point, and then they decide to turn on the charm when it means that they can use it to get them back. So would he start to do that? Would he try to charm you into going back with him? Or if you realize maybe you went too far, do you do anything like that?
Yes, that's actually the part of our relationship that I feel I have the most scars from. Because when I first left him, I finally left and stayed away, I should say. A lot of things started to clear up in my mind. It was literally like I could see colors again. I felt like I'd been living under a fog. So the first time I remember him doing this was we were going on a run in the woods, and I tripped, and he got mad because I'm, you know, too fat for him. So he held my head down in like a frozen little puddle of ice, and I was almost unconscious when he finally let me out of it. And after that happened, he's like, "I bet you're never going to trip when you're running again, are you? And see, I taught you a lesson." I ended up getting really severe pneumonia from that. And when I was at the hospital, when I talked to the doctor, he made me put the phone on speakerphone and hide it so that he could hear what I was saying to them. And at the time, I was like, I don't know why he's doing this. He didn't do anything wrong. Like, he's not the reason I have pneumonia. But for him, he, I guess, knew what was going on. And that just continued through our whole relationship. He ended up, convincing me that so many things were normal. Like, that all these other people were out to get him. All these other people were evil. I felt like I couldn't talk to anybody. He wouldn't let me get my driver's license. So I didn't have a driver's license until I was 26 years old. I finally got it right before I left him. And he would not let me get my driver's license because he convinced me I was a bad driver. And he was like, "I need to be the one driving you everywhere. You can get rides from people. You're not a good driver." He convinced me that I couldn't cook breakfast. So he did all these things to make me totally dependent on him. And that was part of it. The worst part for me that like stands out as very damaging was after when he was really violent and he would like leave bruises on me from beating me up, he would always like hold my head right in front of the mirror and then make me repeat back to myself what he wanted me to believe. And so it would be things like, "I deserved it. I started it. I'm not good at this marriage. I'm not good at as a girlfriend." And then like recounting how he wanted me to tell what had just happened, that I either like fell down the stairs. And at the time, I didn't even half the time remember doing that. And then sometimes I would remember doing it because I was in such a mental fog from just all of the violence that I was living in. He would wake me up in the middle of the night and beat me up in my sleep. And then I would try to like call him out on it. He'd be like, "No, you were dreaming." But I knew I was awake. I had the bruises on me. Sometimes I would get out of bed and like go get a Band-Aid or wash off something. Like, I knew I was awake. I knew he was awake. And, I had so many people try to help me. And I was just believing everything he was doing was normal or okay. And I really thought, this is what I deserve. I'm the problem.
Right around the time you met him, did you have low self-esteem at all?
Yes. I definitely had very low self-esteem. I really believed that, like, I was this horrible person. I really thought, that no one was ever going to like me. And I don't know where those ideas came from still, but that's where my mind frame was. And I was like, this is my one shot at someone who actually likes me.
And so nobody else expressed interest in you at all, or you just maybe you just looked past it?
Yeah, like I had some interest from other people, but I was such an unhealthy person that I attracted unhealthy people back to me. Just like I was not healthy in my mental health, in my physical health. Like I just didn't take care of myself at all. I didn't ever do anything trying to help myself, and to the point, like, I was severely, I guess you would say, empathic. So if anyone else had a problem, that would become my whole world. I would just be swept up in it. And it really took me a lot of therapy to kind of get away from that mentality.
Do you know anything about his background, his childhood, that led him to behave the way he did? Do you know if he came from an atmosphere where domestic violence went on and was accepted?
So I used to ask him all the time, like, what happened to you? Because he always seemed so damaged to me. He had a lot of scars on his body, a lot. And I never could get him to tell me anything. In retrospect, like, just from witnessing his parents' marriage, it's pretty clear that their marriage was unhealthy. I don't know to what extent, you know, he was involved in that or anything, but his father was like 11 years older than his mother. So like in current times, his father would have been considered like a statutory rapist, I guess you would say. He was one of her like coaches, and they just had a really bad relationship. And so his dad actually died fairly recently, and I saw his mom again. Just by coincidence, and she looked so much better. And I started to really think, like, I wonder if their relationship was more toxic than I realized. But yeah, his father was a bad influence for sure. When we went through the whole thing and I finally left, his dad really tried to make my life horrible.
Really? What did he do?
So some of this is kind of identifying, but basically his dad was a leader in a community, and it was really hard because I had lived in this community for several years, and I basically got shunned. And then when I went through the criminal trial, because there was a criminal trial, when I went through that, his dad just tried so hard to make my life miserable and like came up to my mom during the proceedings at the court during the trial and told my mom, like, shame on you. You need to get your daughter under control. It was just, the whole thing was really, really hard. And his dad dying is hard too, because I never really got closure on any of that. But yeah, his dad really thought that husbands should beat their wives. And I tried going to his dad for help, and that was a huge mistake, unfortunately. So I went to his parents saying, like, your son is beating me, and how severe it was. And they both just were like, well, you can talk to him about it. And so then his dad tried to talk to him, and I guess their conversation basically made my husband more violent, because his dad was like, you need to get this woman under control. She can't go around telling people that you're beating her.
So what state was this in that you lived, where your town was?
In Connecticut.
Connecticut, really? Wow, that's not a place where people would normally assume that would happen. I guess they'd assume what happened in like the Deep South or something. What was that community? Was it very rural and kind of backwards in a way?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. For sure. I, you know, when I got out of there and I realized how the rest of the world was living, I was just shocked. It was such a culture shock. you know, my family used to jokingly call his family like that they were in a cult or something, because we had like a small property of just a couple acres, and there was like 15 people living on it. And we had like a little farm thing, and I was one of the only people there that had a job. So it was just really an odd thing. And you would never think that's happening in Connecticut, but Connecticut does have a lot of farming sort of areas actually. But yeah, like, unfortunately there is a lot of, traditional, I guess you would say, mindsets, here, and people who are very resistant to change. And you can see that in various areas of politics, but there's a lot of outdated laws that, I had to deal with. So,
you're undergoing a great deal of physical assaults from this man. Did any of your friends or relatives kind of suspect something along the way that abuse may be happening?
I would say they did. So when we were first dating, my mom, who is a wonderful person, was trying to pull me away and did everything in her power to get me out of the relationship. She never said it was abusive, but she said, "You're not acting like yourself. I don't even recognize you. I feel like you're just under his control." And she actually, we went to see like a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex ended up throwing a chair at the therapist and storming out of the room. Wow. And that was like the last time we went to therapy together.
So how long did that session last before you did that?
Like 15 minutes, I think.
So what was it that set him off?
I believe it was the phrase, like, she needs to have her own opinions.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, he did not like that. He said, the therapist is, like, trying to make us break up. We should have the same opinions. Why would he say you need your own opinions? And, you know, he was having his crocodile tears in the parking lot after the session. And that's another thing. Like, I don't think I ever saw him really cry. He did a lot of fake crying. And it's very confusing when you're dating somebody and they're fake crying and you're trying to figure out, like, is this actually real? Is this fake? But that time, like, I knew it was fake because there was no tears. There was no nothing. Like, and then he looked at me and his eyes were just void. It's just weird. Like, he would switch into this other zone.
And did he ever express, you know, empathy for other people? Did he ever express remorse about things he did to other people? Were those characteristics present in his character at all?
No. I remember one time he got into a physical altercation with a family member, and we tried to have a family meeting to, like, clear the air. And the other guy was like, "I'm sorry, I don't know what I did that made you want to hit me." And he just sat there and was like, "Yeah, you know what you did." At the trial, like, when I was sharing my testimony of what he did to me, he actually was laughing during my testimony when I was bawling my eyes out. That's just the type of person he is, unfortunately. He doesn't feel like he can do anything wrong. He thinks he's chosen by God to be this special, I don't know what.
And was he charged? Was he sentenced to anything?
He was convicted. So he did end up doing some time for everything.
And did the judge pass comment on his character at all? Because sometimes they do that. Sometimes they'll make some kind of statement about them.
So it kind of got weird. Unfortunately, like, the judge, I think which I understand this from two perspectives. The judge was really focused on, you know, Connecticut's really into restorative justice. So the judge was like saying that, telling him like he could get better and he can improve himself. And, you know, this guy basically ruined my life.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was really hard to hear. She, like, the sentencing was way lighter than I thought it should have been. You know, unfortunately, he did almost kill me, and that was, like, the final straw. There were actually three sort of final assaults before I left, and he was only convicted for one of them. And that was really hard to deal with. But at the same time, I was glad that he got something to stick, because, to be totally honest, he is very charming. And this is one of the issues in domestic violence. You have a woman like me who is totally low self-esteem, been gaslighted all these years thinking that she is utterly worthless. My ex-husband, he's now my ex-husband, he is very, very manipulative. So he really tried to be charming with the jury, and I honestly think some of it did work. The only person, like, there was always people who I felt like saw through him. Like, I feel like the DA, the district attorney, saw right through him. He actually tried to talk to, you know, the DA's office and make them, try to convince them that I was lying. And like any lawyer would tell you, that's a bad idea, but he went against his lawyers because he thinks he's that charming. And it's really, really interesting, because I think the only reason he got convicted is that he started to brag to the police about what he did to me and why I deserved it. And so they had that tape, and the jury saw that, and that was a totally different person than the person in the courtroom. Just physically looked different, different way of talking. Like, he really put on a show. And his going to trial, like, is also like he wanted to go to trial because he wanted to be important.
It sounds like there's a mental illness at work. I mean, his behavior is clearly pathological. I mean, you haven't mentioned anything about him drinking heavily or taking drugs. So this is not substance driven. This is just his behavior, just his psyche, right?
Yes, I definitely think so now. At the time, you know, he seemed like he was okay, but he really just, he wasn't mentally well, I don't think. He put things in his own perspective. So, like, you can be in the same conversation with him, and he will walk away with nothing at all similar to what you said. And just, like, his lack of emotion is the other thing. He does get mad, but he doesn't ever cry or show emotion like how most people do. I realize this now because I'm in a very healthy relationship. But he didn't, when he would get mad, he would immediately just start breaking stuff. If he wanted to cry, he would break something. It was just really odd. And in a way, I kind of liked that because I was, like, the emotional one in the relationship. And that's really hard to accept. But there was a part of me that liked that he didn't have the same level of emotions as me.
And you mentioned that very early in the relationship, you were sexually assaulted by him. Did that happen some more throughout the relationship?
Yes. Yeah, that was the main form of abuse, like, during our marriage. When we were dating and engaged, it wasn't that much. But whenever we would get in an argument, that's one of his go-tos. And people say, like, and he believes this as well, that you can't rape your spouse. And, you can. So, like, he would do things, like, to make sure I wasn't interested. Like, beat me up, And as soon as I was like either unconscious or close to unconscious, then he would sexually assault me. The worst like was when I was pregnant with our daughter. That one, that like sexual abuse really, really scared me. And to the point my OB was like trying to figure out what was going on and tried to make him leave the room. And then he got mad because he would come with me to every doctor's appointment. He always had to be in the room with me, hearing everything they're saying. And I think like some of my doctors, they had suspicions, but I was not in a place where I could speak up for myself. It took a lot to get me to that place. I just could not. I felt so much guilt and shame, and I just really struggled to come forward with what was going on.
So these rapes were so aggressive that you incurred some damage to your reproductive organs?
I did have some damage. I am very fortunate with modern medicine that I'm doing pretty well now. But when I first left, I was totally just demolished. And I went to the emergency room. They did a lot of exams and things. And I eventually basically like just have so much scar tissue built up in different parts of my reproductive system now. The other thing is just like lots of cysts from that as well. So I do have to be careful, but I did go to like physical therapy for it, and I've taken a lot of strides on my own health, and it has helped significantly.
Did the OBGYN, did they suspect that rape was going on? Did they ask you about that?
Yes. No, they did. I mean, the one time they got him, they tried to get him to leave the room, and he was refusing. They tried to ask me about it. That obviously didn't go well. So after that, they didn't really bring it up again. I think they had some suspicions, but I would immediately go, no, nothing's happening. That's just how my body is.
And did part of the treatment include surgery?
I didn't have to have any surgery as of now. Hopefully that will never be the case, but I was able to use a lot of natural remedies. Like I said, I went to a physical therapist that deals specifically with this type of trauma. Because what happens is like when you go through this, your muscles are not able to relax. They're just like, it's kind of like your PTSD for your body. And so you will like get like spasms and twitches that are extremely painful. And that's mainly what I was dealing with. And it took me, I would say this year is the first time I felt semi-normal. Right before I left, it was just so violent.
Sorry to get into any graphic details. Like, did it affect your day-to-day functioning? Like, did it affect your menstrual cycle, things like that?
I honestly don't know because it's such a blur of when I first left. The main thing that I had issues with was, like, my bladder. Just a lot of problems with my bladder and my spleen as well. Those were the two organs that seemed to really have taken the brunt of it. As far as my cycle, I never really tracked it after I left. I was just like in a daze. I had no idea what was going on. I never knew when it was coming or going. I did take some medications as well that affected it because like I do know that strongly suspicious that he did cheat on me. So they put me on like some preventative medications too. I honestly don't really know how it affected that part of my body.
And did you say you had your daughter before all that happened?
I had my daughter when we were like kind of in a good time is when I got pregnant. And of course he was super happy to have a kid with me because that means we're linked forever. It was after I had her that things got really bad.
Did you have any suspicions that he could end up abusing her one day? Like, was there anything about how he interacted her where some red flags came up?
When I was with him, no. As soon as I left, yes. Yes, definitely. Some of the stuff that, so she still sees him. And some of the stuff that I hear, I do always, like, keep a very attentive ear. I physically check her every time that I get her back. Because he's no longer supervised because he took all the classes he's required to take. But I still check her every time she comes home, and I'm very cautious just because if something is happening, I need to know right away. I need to do something because I really don't want the cycle to continue.
Does she ever come home, even if there's no physical distress, does she ever seem emotionally distressed? Does she come home in a good mood or?
She's always really happy to come home. I'll put it that way. It's hard because she's still pretty young. But she does tell me everything that happens when she's over there, I'm pretty sure. And we have a really good relationship. So I'm just hopeful that when the day comes, she is going to tell me.
Has he broken any dishes or thrown any chairs while she was around?
That I don't know. I know that, so he is remarried. So I know that there has been some verbal altercations, but I haven't heard anything beyond that from her. So let's hope that it's, you know, maybe those classes did actually have some type of impact on him being more mature.
Yeah, I'm interested in knowing about his self-concept. Now, do you think he has low self-esteem, or is it a matter of being so arrogant that he feels he has to lord over other people? Which one do you think it is?
It's really hard to say. I would say it depends on the case a week. If you ask him verbally, he would say that, you know, he's the greatest of all time and that he is just, you know, God's gift to humanity, because that's really what he would always put out there. But I don't think someone who thinks they're that special would beat their spouse. Hard for me to accept. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like he had something to prove. What it was, I have no idea. But I was thinking, you know, I wonder if it's low self-esteem. Like, he has to prove to himself he's superior by making someone else feel inferior.
I would definitely say that's true. I also know, like, he has some sort of OCD tendencies. So, like, you know, one of the times he almost killed me was because I changed the password for Netflix or something like that. And when I went to tell him the new password, he just flipped out. And so it's like, I know part of it is control. Part of it is like an OCD thing.
And what was he like at his best?
At his best, he was very attentive. He was, you know, my world. And we would just, like, sit there and look into each other's eyes and feel all those feelings that you think you're supposed to feel. And we would have fun. He was always spontaneous. Very spontaneous with, like, doing fun stuff. I would say, like, there were some good times like that where you would just feel very captivated by what he's saying and how he's acting. Unfortunately, like, those good times weren't very many.
Yeah. And so part of the healing process for you, you mentioned therapy. So what was the therapist's evaluation of him? What did they say about him and his personality?
My therapist said that he's really sick. And the main thing she tried to encourage me to do was to mentally let go of the stuff he would say about me. So, for example, like I said, he said I couldn't cook breakfast. So my therapist made me cook breakfast. She's like, every day this week, cook breakfast. And then see how bad you are actually at cooking breakfast. And she just thinks, like, my therapist thought that he was a sociopath, I guess you would say. That was kind of her diagnosis. You know, she always was like, I kind of wish I could talk to him and just find out what's actually going on in his brain. But just like, unfortunately, like, you know, I had the text messages still. I had the Facebook messages, the voicemails and everything. And I was holding on to all of those, partially for the trial, but also just for myself. And so she would actually, like, I would play them for her, read them to her and be like, what do you think, like, what did he mean by this? Or how should I have responded better? And that's what I was obsessed with when I left. I was obsessed with this idea. I could have done something that would have made him behave. And my therapist had to spend a lot of her time convincing me that there was nothing I could do that would have made him behave. And she had to convince me that he was mentally ill, that he was a sociopath, you know, that he had unhealthy tendencies. And it took a lot of months before I started to even consider that there was something wrong with him.
We discussed earlier that you had low self-esteem for a very long time up to the relationship and throughout. How is it now? I mean, I know from my own experience that raising your level of self-esteem can be very difficult. It can take a long time. Has that improved? Like, how do you feel about yourself now?
Yeah, so it sounds so elementary, but what I did was I wrote affirmations all over my house. In every room, I put like an affirmation poster. And so it's literally the reverse of the things he said to me. So like one of them said, I am valuable. I belong. I am appreciated by my family. Like stuff like that. I literally wrote them and put them in every room of the house. I took washable crayons and wrote on the side of the furniture, like similar phrases about myself. And then when I was in those rooms, I would just make myself read them out loud 3 times. It sounds so simple, but it really, really helped me.
Sure.
It did wonders. It was like, because like my therapist was saying, every day you heard him say to you multiple times these things, and you already had low self-esteem, so look how low you are now. Like, I literally thought I couldn't do anything. I would just sit in bed all day and stare at the wall. That was, like, how I was when I left. Just so debilitated because I didn't have him there telling me what to do. I didn't know what to eat because he had always controlled what I eat. I didn't know how to dress because he always bought my clothes and picked up my outfits every day. And so it took a lot of rework. But now I would say my self-esteem is like in the middle range. I still have bad days, but I have a successful job. I have a lot of healthy relationships. I have my own house. So for me, it's like I've shown myself a lot of the things he said I couldn't do, I can. And it kind of motivated me in a way just to prove him wrong.
And are you in another relationship now?
So I am remarried now because it's just several years ago that I got out of this other one. And he's awesome. He's actually also like an anti-domestic violence activist. And he's a great dad to my daughter and just like such a sweet guy. He actually, I think, has more emotions than me,
yeah.
Which I really like. And, you know, he doesn't try to charm anybody. He's just 100% himself.
I don't know.
And that's like the main thing that drew me to him.
Yeah, that is great. And I don't know if this question comes across as strange, but was it hard for you to give yourself permission to be with someone like this? Because it was such a huge change of pace to be with the man like that. So was it kind of jarring at first that you didn't see it coming? Or?
Yeah, in some ways, yes. So by the time I started dating him, I had been away from we'd been separated for 3 years, me and my ex. So I was kind of ready to like start looking. I honestly didn't want anything serious. Mm-hmm. I just wanted somebody to have fun with. But the very first time I talked to him, I was just like, he just had something about him that really warmed my heart. It was really hard in the beginning. I had a lot of panic attacks. not because of anything he did, but like it was things like he would close the door and the door would close too hard and I would start shaking. Or he would go to hug me and he would just hug me the wrong way and I would have to leave the house. Like, I don't know how he had so much patience, but he really, really cares about me. And I think just because, like, he already had a knowledge of how damaging domestic violence is, like, he thought I was worth putting in the time. And that really, like, kind of opened my heart to him. And I'm really grateful that I met somebody like that. I think that when I first left, my biggest fear was no one is ever going to love me. I'm never going to be married again. I'm going to be alone the rest of my life, because that's what my ex kept telling me. And so meeting somebody that actually cares about me was such a healing experience in a lot of ways, honestly.
So if he's involved with activism for domestic violence victims, had you been a member of some kind of support group for women who have had that experience? And if so, was that a help to you?
I did go to a support group. I did find it really helpful. It opened my eyes a lot, because it sounds so strange, but hearing those other women's stories, do you realize how sick these guys are? When it's just your story, you're thinking, oh, I deserve it. But when you hear someone else say it, you're like, oh, that's horrible. How could he do that to you? You're the mother of his kids. And then you take a look in the mirror and you're like, oh, wait, that's almost identically what happened to me. And, yeah, it really opens your eyes to hear it from someone else's mouth. The other thing that was kind of cool about the group was, like, you know, that's actually where, like, the affirmation thing came up a lot. They would talk a lot about affirming ourselves. But the group was really, I think, one of the key things for me. At the time, I thought it was a waste of time. Pretty much the court required me to go. And I was like, I don't need to go to this. You know, I was married and my husband only has like 6 charges. It's not that bad. And then I went in there, I was like, oh, 6 charges is actually pretty bad in the state of Connecticut. So like they have like a general DV charge. He didn't even get that charge. They just went straight for the felonies with him. So it's like, it did open my eyes to how serious it was. And then also the other thing that was amazing about this group was seeing the women who had gone back, and this was the time they stayed away. And, you know, that really encouraged me to see how, like, they were happier now that they've been away for a couple of months. Because I started going right after I left, and seeing how they were doing better than I was really encouraging. I actually left my ex 11 times before it finally stuck. And I think like that program is probably one of the reasons I didn't go back, because he was really trying to get back with me, basically like stalking me after I left.
Yeah, and I find that Hollywood tends to portray domestic violence surprisingly in a way that sugarcoats it. Like they always show like, well, you know, it's a lot of shouting and he hits her now and then, but it actually tends to go a lot further than that, like what you've experienced. And another sad element as well is that in some cases the children are manipulated by the abuser into thinking that it's the mother who's at fault. So I guess your daughter would have been too young for that, but was that something you heard about at the group as well?
Yeah. It's kind of disgusting because, like, some of these dads would do such horrible things, and then they would end up with custody of the kids, and that was really, really heartbreaking to see. And the reason that happens is, like, because the guy, you know, he does have a DV conviction, but then they'll, like, try to find dirt on the mom, or they'll say, I mean, the court will tell the mom, like, you put your child in danger by staying in that home. And they try to, like, the attorneys try to turn that into the fact that, you know, the dad is better than you because you're the one putting your kid in danger knowingly. He never hit you in front of the child or something like that. Like, it's disgusting. But I'm still worried about that just because she's still in contact. And he is manipulative, just his personality. I still have to deal with it like twice a month. And I do see him manipulating her, and that's hard to accept. And I try to talk to her about it in a way that doesn't make him the bad guy. She has no idea what he did, even though she was in the room sometimes when some of this stuff happened. She just doesn't remember it. And so, yeah, I've been really worried. I still worry about that. That's, like, something I'm going to have to deal with the rest of her life.
And during the trial, just to go back for a moment, what kind of things did his attorney say to try to discredit you?
Oh, my goodness. Everything. Everything. Looking back now, it was ridiculous. But at the time, I was so upset by it. So one of the things she kept bringing up was, I was working like a 15-hour work day. And she kept bringing that up over and over and over. And then, like, in one of her closing arguments, she was saying how any woman who would work that much didn't really care about her child. And I was working that much because he had been fired, like, so many times from different jobs. He had no income. I was the only income. So I had to work a lot, our whole relationship. I remember one of the other things was they brought a receipt. So they had gone, so the way the protective order went down, they actually, his attorney got all of my possessions and went through everything I owned. And then they refused to give me my stuff until I got a court order to get my things, which was about 3 months. I had literally nothing. She had gone through all my stuff. So she did something where she pulled out like a receipt, and the receipt had one bottle of wine on it, and she put it into evidence. And then she showed me the receipt and was like, you bought one bottle of wine in August of last year. And at the time, I honestly hardly drank. And I bought one bottle of wine for like half a year, and I was devastated on the stand. I started shaking because I thought I was in trouble, but it was one bottle of wine. It was stuff like that. You know, they tried to go through everything. Like, they brought in some of my clothes to, like, show how, like, I dressed like I was promiscuous. They brought in, like, some of my pajamas to show, like, try to show, like, oh, she was asking him to rape her. There was a lot of stuff like that, just insane in retrospect, but at the time, I was totally shaken up by that. I was so embarrassed. I was just sitting up there in front of a room of strangers having, you know, these very personal things pulled out in front of everybody. And I was on the stand for 6 hours. And he was on the stand for 20 minutes.
Wow, so you were as much on trial as he was.
That's how they do it. You know, it was a rape trial, and that's how they do rape trials. They really put the victim on the stand, and all the guy has to do is go up there and just be nice for 20 minutes, and they have so much more time. And that was part of her closing argument, too. You know, we have a very innocent perpetrator because he was only on the stand for 20 minutes. She was on the stand for 6 hours because there's so much dirt to discuss on her. We had plenty of dirt on him, but it was all deemed inadmissible, or a lot of it was. Unfortunately, we didn't have that police tape of him admitting what he did. But aside from that, it's just like, you know, it was just such a horrible experience to go through.
Did you ever bring your medical records into it, like as proof that he raped you?
Yeah, so I tried to bring those in, and they wouldn't put them into the trial. And it's actually interesting because I ended up hiring my own attorney as a victim just because my ex was coming after me so much, and I couldn't take it. And so he was pretty much there working with my victim advocate, who was a wonderful victim advocate. But she just had a lot on her plate. So my ex, like I said, was in the military. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, But the military blocked the courts from getting my medical record.
Really? Well, you know, there has been a lot of tolerance in military culture of sexual assault that's been documented.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he was, unfortunately, he was pretty high ranked in the military, to be honest. And so because of his rank and who he knew, that's part of why his sentencing was so light. He had a 4-star general write a letter to the judge asking for a life sentence that he could serve his country. He had the military calling me. I had to go in and meet with them. And, yeah, that's basically, like, I never should have met with them because that's what happened with my medical records. And they put a hold on them, basically, until the trial was over.
Wow, that's very corrupt.
And the copy that I was able to get was one page. When I was, like, I had all those tests done, they didn't even include results for any of that. They just sent, like, a cover letter of the results. And my mom and I actually put in a complaint with the hospital saying, like, that they mishandled the whole thing and what we were upset about. But, yeah, it was pretty disturbing to see. The way they handle it in the military is, like, you know, fortunately now he was dishonorably discharged because of all of this. But at the time, your immediate commander is the one who decides if the case against you is going to move forward. And his commander was his best friend, so nothing happened for a while. And it was scary to me having a protective order and my ex is still allowed to fire a gun on base.
Yeah,
it's a scary thing.
So how does the handover go now with your daughter? Does he come to your home to get her, or how does it work now?
No, I am in the confidential address program because he kept showing up at my other houses. So he will never have my address. And it's all done through a third party, which, honestly, it's working pretty well right now. We will see.
Mm-hmm.
But we just keep it, like, I don't have contact with him, or as little as possible.
And
I have to have some, but as little as possible.
And there's an interesting subplot to this story as well. You mentioned that your daughter, at the age of 3, saved your life, so I was interested in knowing what happened there.
So right before I left him, I would say my last night there, I told him I was going to the police. And I said, tomorrow I'm going to the cops. I think I should tell it to you first. If you just apologize now, I'll do a civil divorce. I will not go to the police. I just want you to admit that you're hurting me and it has to stop. You can't hurt people. And he was so calm about it, had no emotions about it or anything. So I thought, oh, we're good. Like, maybe I actually made peace with him and I don't have to go to the cops. I just got upset that day because he kept hitting me. And then as soon as he would hit me, he'd go, I didn't hit you. I was like, yes, you did. I felt it. I saw you. So I just had it. So we had been in this fight, but I thought we were okay. I fell asleep on the sofa because I was just staying away from him as much as possible. I wake up and he is on top of me with his hand over my face and his whole body weight pressing down on me. And his other hand is around my chest, just squeezing me. And so I started to scream. I was absolutely terrified. And I thought for sure that was it. He started, squeezing my face tighter. And then he pulled out his hand and just started hitting me in the chest over and over with it. And I couldn't do anything. He's almost twice my height. Like, I'm very short. He's over 6 foot. I couldn't do anything. I was just screaming hysterically. And my daughter actually ran in the room at 3 years old and pulled him off of me.
Wow.
And that's when I went to the cops. I was like, and, you know, I was so, when she ran in the room and pulled him off of me, and then just seeing, like, that innocent face, like, she pulled on him, he wouldn't stop, so she screamed at him and started hitting him until he got off of me. And then he stopped and he went and sat somewhere else. She crawled up into my, like, lap. I was, like, trying to sit up. She crawled up into my lap and, like, cuddled me and asked me if I was okay. And she's like, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And then she looked at him like, "Bad daddy." And that was the last straw. That's why I left. I realized, like, if I stay, she's just going to keep getting more involved. This is the third time in a week he almost killed me. I need to get out. And I laugh because if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry. It was just like the most sobering experience, just seeing that tiny face looking at you, asking you if you're okay. Mm. When she was like so young, I'm just seeing like, okay, this is not all right. Because until that point, he would always convince me he hadn't done it or that what he had done was okay. And so seeing her being upset and seeing her knowing it was a problem, even though she's three, it's like, I felt so much clarity at that moment. I was like, okay, this is it. And I went to the police the next day. I didn't originally want to go to the cops, but I was a teacher at the time and my job essentially told me I had to go. They couldn't take anymore. It's just like not healthy for someone who works with students to be in that environment.
And how old is your daughter now?
She's 7 years old now.
Does she remember that incident?
I don't think so. You know, I pray to God she doesn't.
Yeah.
But when I first left, yeah, she never wanted to see him again. It took a lot of, again, she also went to a lot of therapy. She was self-mutilating as a three-year-old, which is something I never knew was possible. And so, like, she, because of that, her school 2-on-1'd her, and I had to take her to therapy once a week for, like, 2 years. And I was very, very lucky to have a great therapist for her that somehow got her to stop and also really helped her. But when she first got reunified with him, she didn't ever want to see him. And she was just crying and shaking. She didn't want to go in the room. And then, like, a couple of weeks later, it was no big deal. It was just part of the routine. Like, she would go in the supervised room and see him. Which, in some senses, is very hard. On the other sense, like, I think as long as it's safe, she should probably know him. But it's really like a hard line to walk.
Yeah. So she was like, she was cutting? Is that what she was doing?
She actually pulled out her hair.
Oh.
Yeah. She pulled her hair out and she scratched off a lot of her skin. Like, pretty severe. She had big patches of hair she had pulled out and she had scratched, like, her hands were totally raw. Her arms were raw from scratching them so much. And she wouldn't eat. She wouldn't sleep. Like, it was like my nightmare when I was already trying to heal myself, dealing with, you know, a daughter also having PTSD. And then we would, like, trigger each other. We both would be upset. It was a really tough time, really hard.
So how has PTSD been, how has it manifested for you? You mentioned sometimes there are triggers in your new relationship, but have you also had, like, you know, you mentioned that your ex would, like, wake you up by beating you. So do you find it difficult to sleep now? Do you get night terrors?
So when I first left, I had really bad night terrors. And I actually would wake up with bruises from hitting myself, which I guess is very common for people who have been severely abused. I didn't sleep much at all. I would sometimes just, like, go sit in front of my locked door to make sure he couldn't get in. You know, looking back now, it's not rational behavior, but at the time, that's how I coped. And I've had to accept that. For now, this has been, like, a solid 4-ish years. I'm doing pretty good. I really am. I still have things that really trigger me. So pretty much anytime he sends me, we have to use court mandated communication service. anytime he sends me a message, I immediately start to shake. There are certain things, like, I can't really drive in the town. And I avoid the town that all this stuff happened in. Like, I drive around it, even if it's a 20 minutes extra. I really try to stay away from that town. If I see someone driving his type of car behind me, I still turn around and do a loop to make sure I'm not being followed. There's a lot of little things like that. And some of my triggers, I honestly didn't know what they were for a long time. So I kept a trigger journal and started writing down, like, things that happened right before I got upset and just kept it. And then I started trying to eliminate those things that would trigger me. Like, the working out thing was really, really hard because I needed it to stress relief and to be healthy. But I had such a deep, like, trauma connected to working out. And it was really hard for me, like, to work out. That's why I did the physical therapy. I ended up getting a trainer. And now I'm, like, back to working out 5 days a week. And it really, like, helps me with my PTSD to keep it in check. Because I know for myself, like, if I work out, it helps with the stress of it. And it also helps me to go to sleep. So that's what I've noticed with that now. I've made a lot of good progress, but it's not exactly where it needs to be still. I want to be, like, 100% trigger-free. I don't know if I'll ever get there, but I've really put in a lot of work towards it.
Did the rape, does that make it difficult to be intimate?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it's kind of the opposite, because I feel, like, the need to reclaim that for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it is really, it definitely has been a challenge. It definitely has been a challenge. I'm lucky, like I said, my husband's very, like, understanding and patient and very kind about it. I always feel bad if it does happen. But yeah, there's certain things that, like, I can't do, don't want to do, just because it's too hard. It has been. I would say that's one of the areas that I have to put conscious thought into not being affected.
Well, I have to say, you know, this is really one of the worst domestic violence cases I've ever heard about. But, you know, you survived it, and it sounds like you're doing well for the most part. There's setbacks along the way, but I think it's very brave of you to share your story.
Well, thank you. And I really hope that, like I said, somebody else hearing this knows things can get better, because my situation was so bleak. I thought my life was always going to be awful, and that part of it made it so hard.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I mean, and they say that these guys, these abusers, they're very good at knowing who the victims are going to be. They can, it's almost as if they can smell it on them.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope he's learned and is less abusive, but I for sure, look, you know, I had to change myself not to attract somebody like that again, too.
Yeah. Well, you deserve much better, that's for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I thank you so much for doing our show. I'm sure your example will be inspiring to other women who have had this experience.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Human Monsters. Bye for now.